Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new episode of The Dan Wooten Interview, where each week I bring you some of the biggest names from around the world straight to your headphones. And I'm so excited about today's edition because I am joined by one of the superstars in the world of podcasting, American broadcasting legend Katie Couric. She used to be one of the biggest stars on American TV, the darling of the Today Show, also worked for CBS and ABC and Yahoo. But over the last couple of years, she has launched her own little podcasting empire where she interviews other celebrities in depth in America. So it's basically a little bit like this podcast, but the US version. So, of course, when she was visiting London to record a special edition of her podcast, it was essential that I got her in. We're going to be talking all about her incredible career broadcasting on 9/11, the fallout from the Matt Lauer scandal, and what's to come in a very, very tumultuous time in America. Because remember, Katie Couric, she was actually at Donald Trump's wedding. So I'll ask her about that and the relationship with Melania as well. Plus, of course, Katie will be taking on Is This Your Life? And revealing the five songs that mean the most to her. Stick around later too, because I'll have all of your comments about some of our previous guests, including on our Love Island special with Kem Settanay. And if you want to listen to that interview or any of our previous A-listers, like we've got James Corden and Kylie Minogue, Gary Barlow, just make sure you subscribe right now. But first, I'm so excited about this. Let's go in depth and personal with Katie Couric. Katie Couric, it is such an honor to have you in London on my pod. I've been such a fan of your broadcasting career ever since I was a very, very little child in New Zealand.
I know,
growing up when you were on the Today Show.
That's so flattering. Thank you. So probably since you were knee-high to a grasshopper,
yeah,
you watched me on the Today
Show.
Very,
very young, and in some very big moments as well, which we'll talk about soon. And now I get to listen to you every week because, of course, you are one of the superstars who have entered the world of podcasting.
Yes.
A world which obviously I love and which is exploding at the moment. And what I think is so great about it, Katie, is that it's truly international, because it means I can listen to your podcast on exactly the same day that anyone in America can listen to it.
It's fascinating, the whole phenomenon, isn't it, that podcasts have sort of exploded, as you said, and that there's so many different ones, and that in this era where we think people have such truncated and short attention spans, there's something about the intimacy and the depth of a podcast that I think appeal to a number of listeners.
Absolutely, that don't have to stick to time limits, that don't have to worry about throwing to a commercial break or
you don't have
packing
to wear
an interview in within 2 minutes.
You don't have to wear makeup.
Exactly, and we're actually certainly not right now. Well, I'm not.
I'm wearing a little. But there is something, too, about this medium where people feel more relaxed. I think when cameras are, you know, somebody
absolutely
who's done television for a long time, there are a whole host of things that people worry about. And I think that they sort of mentally process and as they're answering questions or having a conversation, sort of what is my body language like, what are my expressions like. And with podcasting, there's something very liberating about not worrying about all of those things and how you appear and how you, you know, what your affect is, that I think makes people just feel much more relaxed and much more forthcoming.
Well, there are a lot of similarities between our podcasts, so if you're listening right now, I really recommend that you go and subscribe to Katie's, because you go in depth with usually one main guest a week. And I was listening last night to Juliana Margulies, obviously the star of ER and The Good Wife.
And now Dietland.
Yes, a new show, which I haven't seen yet, actually. But you get to cover off a whole load, a whole range of topics. And also you can sort of see where the conversation flows. And especially with your podcast in particular, obviously you are still covering off the American cultural wars of the day,
right,
I guess.
Exactly.
Without it being news focused, which I think is quite important with a podcast that people listen to maybe a couple of weeks late.
Right.
But you were the queen of the US TV interview, Katie. Yeah. And your style always fascinated me because it was very non-threatening, but then you could still go in for the kill in a way that would be different to some of the more confrontational US mm-hmm. broadcasters. Is that just you? Is that just your personality? Or was it a style that you honed to make you successful?
Well, people used to call me the Velvet Hammer, you know? But, I think that I'm a very direct person and kind of without pretense or affect. And I think that very early on in my career, I just learned that you should be direct, but you should also be respectful. Mm. You should be persistent. And I think your tone really matters a lot.
Maybe it's your voice because
yeah.
you have a kind voice. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think I'm also just kind of a friendly, open person.
Yeah.
And I think that that's tripped people up in the past because they think that I'm just going to come in and it's going to be a nice chat. But, you know, I am a journalist. And
you're
when I sit down with someone, I want to find out important information and get someone to reveal something about themselves. I mean, so that's sort of my attitude. But sometimes, you know, if I'm interviewing someone who's undergone a terrible situation or has endured tragedy, I'll have one approach. Mm. And if there's someone else who's a politician who I think is not being forthcoming about something, I'll bring out a different sort of arsenal of tricks. So it really depends from interview to interview, but I always want to get something from it. And it took me a while to learn, Dan, to say, I'm sorry, Senator, you did not answer my question.
I mean, there have been so many famous interviews of yours, but I think the one that will always stay with me was when you were the anchor of the CBS Evening News, and it was 2007 and the campaign for president.
2008, I think 2008. It was, right? Yeah.
And you were interviewing Sarah Palin.
Right.
The then vice presidential candidate for
right.
John McCain, who had been a superstar. You know, she'd launched onto the scene as a superstar. And you ask her a very, very simple question. What newspapers do you read? And she can't answer it.
You know, that was a very interesting process. She was virtually unknown. She had wowed everyone at the Republican National Convention. It was a time when Barack Obama was flatlining, and suddenly she burst on the scene. She was somebody we had never seen before. And she had them eating out of the palm of her hand at the RNC. And I went after she had gone through the UN talking to a lot of world leaders. I interviewed her there, and then I interviewed her again in Ohio. And I think by then she was just so sick of me. Mm. But the question—
Have you seen her since? Because,
no,
I mean, she really doesn't like you now, Katie.
She doesn't
does
like
she?
Me. But, you know, it was very interesting because immediately after that interview aired, no one said it was unfair. No one said that I
had—
That was gotcha questions. I think it just revealed that she was out of her depth and not ready for prime time. But that question that you mentioned that got played so much was— I was shooting B-roll, and for your listeners, that's just like video that, you know, you get somebody walking that you usually put narration or voiceover over. And I was curious because she was so kind of extremist in her views. I mean, she was very, very conservative, like people who are very liberal. I'm curious about what shaped their ideology and how they became so deeply entrenched in that point of view. So I said, I'm just curious. I think I said, what newspapers and magazines do you read on a regular basis that have helped shape your worldview? But she, I think, a combination of really being just wanting me out of her line of vision and just
and
not knowing what to say just sort of came across as if she never read. And then I think that along with everything else that people watched in the course of that interview, I think gave people second thoughts about her ability to really kind of digest and understand complicated public policy. And this big group of undecided voters, I think, maybe thought You know, I like John McCain, but I'm wondering about his judgment selecting her, and I'm not sure if she's up to the job.
The Five.
So, Katie, each week I ask my guests about the five songs that mean the most to them in life. So maybe it could be a song that helped you become a star today, or one that reminded you of a family member. We've previously had Gary Barlow talking about how he wanted to write lyrics like Elton John, and Camila Cabello took us to Mexico with Buena Vista Social Club. And Meghan Trainor, this was a weird one for me, she shared her love for Phil Collins on the Tarzan soundtrack, even though she's very, very young. So, Katie, I'm so excited about this. Let's get your five tracks and why they mean so much to you. So let's kick off with song one.
Well, that's really difficult because I love music and I have very eclectic tastes in music. But if I had to sort of pick five, gosh, I think maybe my first would be Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring. I took piano lessons for 10 years, and that's something I played on two pianos with my piano teacher, that is, of course, by Bach. So I would say that is something that always brings back wonderful memories of my childhood.
Song two.
As Time Goes By.
No matter what the future brings, as time goes by.
My dad used to yell down to the basement where we had an upright piano, "Katie, play As Time Goes By." And I played. Not only did I take piano for 10 years, but I also played by ear. So I could sort of have fun as long as it was in the key of C, like Irving Berlin. I could play almost anything. And that was one of my dad's favorite songs.
Love that. Song three?
Gosh, I don't know. My teenage years, I don't know, I was really into The Carpenters, So Close to You.
Just like me.
Was probably beautiful. A big song for me, and I was convinced that I sounded just like Karen Carpenter when I sang, and used to bore the tears out of my friends, making them listen to me sing Karen Carpenter. So that was something that I really loved growing up, and I also loved the Jackson 5, I'll Be There. That's very much sort of my junior high school years. I think The Way You Look Tonight by Frank Sinatra was one of my all-time favorites.
And the way you look to
my first dance at my wedding, and this was before it became so ubiquitous at almost every wedding. I thought it was fairly original when I picked it.
Beautiful. Great choices. Now, Katie, your most famous broadcast, though, came on the morning of 9/11 because you're on air hosting the Today Show, which at that point is by far and away the most watched and successful morning television show in America. So you've got millions and millions of people tuned in. It's a totally normal show. People don't know the Today Show actually broadcasts live from New York. So you're very, very close to Times Square. And you know, people come and gather around the windows of the Today Show famously, don't they? So there's a lot of interaction with the crowd.
Yes, and on the plaza. And it's become a big tourist attraction.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it myself. It's a huge, huge production. And then all of a sudden, plane flies into the World Trade Center while your co-host Matt Lauer is doing a very mundane interview. And the footage of the next hours that you're on air is now the centerpiece of the 9/11 Museum in New York. That's how historic that broadcast became. So take me back to that day. What was your first thought when you saw what happened? And then you stayed so calm watching live on air this terrorist attack take place in real time.
Yeah, I'll never forget that morning because it was one of those beautiful, crisp fall mornings, and the sky was this cerulean blue. I always think of that color because it's in the Crayola crayon box, and it's this like bright, pure blue. And when my little girl, Carrie, when my daughter was like two or three, I asked her what her favorite color was, and she said cerulean. So I always remember that. But, you know, I was in the back probably just relaxing while Matt was doing this interview, and I looked up at the monitor, and I saw the World Trade Center was on fire. And we're like, all of us, you know, the news writers and some of the staff people were like, what's going on here? Then I thought, oh, this is terrible. A small plane hit the World Trade Center. That's terrible. Oh, good. It's before 9 o'clock. Hopefully nobody's in the office yet. And I sort of kept rationalizing all this. And then, of course, I came into the show, into the set, and it was sort of off to the races for what was one of the most tragic and just upsetting and horrific days in, I think, our country's history to have this happen. And then, you know, I remember I might have seemed calm, but honestly, I was dying inside and my hands were shaking.
Because you've got your family, you've got your kids, and presumably when you're on air, you can't communicate with them.
Yeah, I mean, I was worried about them, of course, but I thought they were, you know, you did feel like the world was coming to an end.
Because no one knew what was going to happen next.
But also, of course, I was first and foremost concerned about all those people in that building.
Of course.
And then to sit there and watch in real time that second plane plow into the second tower. You know, I remember so well Matt saying, it's very clear this is a terrorist attack. I think we didn't say Islamic terrorism until a bit later, but it was just unreal. And it got worse and worse. Of course, Tom Brokaw came in and the three of us sat together. And when that building collapsed and you saw just all the collateral damage and heard about people jumping off the building and people killing people who had jumped off the building because their bodies had become, you know, almost missiles. Mm. I mean, it was just awful. And one of the worst parts of it, I think, were the days afterwards where so many people so desperate to find their loved ones. And it just ripped my heart apart.
And as I say, that broadcast, now historic, featured in the 9/11 Museum. And you and Matt Lauer, you had this partnership that made you the first couple of American TV.
Yeah.
I mean, you are so famous in America to a point that we probably can't understand here in the UK, where we don't have quite the same relationship with TV. You know, people felt like they knew you and that you were part of their lives.
I think in morning shows in particular, people feel very much familiar and a kind of kindred spirit because they wake up and you're a part of their lives.
Oh,
they feel as if you're in their bedroom and their living room. And I think because there's a whole variety of things that are done on morning television, not only hard news, but also features, cooking, but, you know, authors. So you see almost all sides of the people who are doing that. It's not a kind of a one-dimensional presentation. And so as a result, people feel very, very connected to you, I think.
Now, Katie, are you aware of Piers Morgan?
Yes.
Did you know him when he was broadcasting in New York?
Not really, a little bit. You know, I think I saw him around, but I did not know him well.
So you know he has since taken over the big morning show on ITV here in the UK called Good Morning Britain.
Yeah.
And he's shaken up breakfast television here and become a ratings sensation.
Has he really? So how and why?
Because he's really changed the formula. So he's very confrontational. He'll take on guests. It's very much an opinion show built around him. But I just wondered if you had any advice for him in terms of maintaining a long time in breakfast TV, because Piers has said he finds the hours virtually impossible, to the point actually where he now only broadcasts 3 days a week, which is probably something that in America you would never have been allowed to do.
No, I mean, that would have been hard because I think people like consistency. I mean, listen, I think it speaks to kind of the changing times. People are very angry. They're very polarized. They're very agitated. So it seems to me that he's kind of an extension of the general sentiment that's happening, you know, all over the world, in the UK. You can tell me more about that. And in the United States, and he's kind of using himself as a vessel to express some of that anger and frustration and antagonism.
It's definitely a different formula.
Yeah.
But it's working for him.
Well, yeah. Well, then good for him.
Firsts. Your first kiss.
Gary Whiting at a boy-girl party.
First person you were starstruck by.
Jean Shalit on the streets of New York.
First person you talked to today.
My friend Kevin, because it was super early in the States and he was getting up to meet his trainer.
First thing you do in the morning.
Look at my phone.
First celebrity crush.
so typical. Between Hugh Jackman and George Clooney.
That good. That a good choice. I'll let you have two there,
okay.
Katie.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I mentioned your co-host, Matt Lauer, mm-hmm. before, and I just wonder, I mean, look, there'll be a lot of people in the UK who are not even aware of this story,
right.
Katie, because Matt Lauer was obviously someone who was world famous in America, didn't necessarily have the following over here, but he had stayed on the Today Show after you left and was recently sacked as part of the Me Too movement and a big scandal over sexual harassment, which he'd conducted on his time at the Today Show. But where I wonder about how it impacts you is what about your legacy? You know, because you had a legacy as a TV couple, you know, as the most successful TV broadcasting partnership that America had ever seen. I mean, as I say, you were front and center of the 9/11 Museum as you walk around those exhibitions. And I just wonder how devastating it is for you that your legacy as a partnership, I mean, obviously you've had a huge journalistic legacy post Today Show. You went on to the CBS Evening News. But I wonder about if it damages your legacy for your time at the Today Show.
I don't really think of it that way. I think that whatever legacy I have, which I don't really think that much about, is really based on who I am and what I've been able to accomplish as an individual.
Absolutely.
But having said that, you know, it's heartbreaking to sit next to someone for a long time and to hear and understand more clearly that there was behavior that was going on that you had no idea that it was going on, and that if there were instances, and it certainly sounds as if there were, where he exploited his power, took advantage of people, where they felt uncomfortable, it's so disappointing. Mm. You know, and
how
can
do you
only
rationalize your friendship with him? I mean, I know the current hosts of the Today Show have been very brave. And actually, I really liked what they said, actually, which was that, you know, he does remain a friend. You don't approve of the behavior, but you also don't necessarily immediately end a friendship.
Yeah. You know, it's I think that one can only take his or her personal experience, mm-hmm. and what they sort of, the person they knew and the relationship they developed. And, you know, clearly it's affected my view of who Matt is as a person. Mm-hmm. How could it not? But, you know, I think that, you know, it's a very sad thing. It's sad that kind of culture existed, and that people were hurt or damaged. And I think, you know, I think it's much more complicated and nuanced than people think it is.
Because
I think of all the women, for example, and in all these cases, who might have been doing great things in a certain industry or profession, but because of behavior that was tolerated or even encouraged or somehow, you know, put up with, that they had to leave and could not live up to their potential. I heard one story about an anchor who was sort of inappropriate. This was, you know, sort of in the context of all the Me Too revelations. And a young woman who worked at a network was very excited to have an opportunity to go cover a big story, a big national, international story. Mm. And because he was known to be inappropriate, the management chose to send a male producer with him instead of her. And that, I think, is an example of sort of the collateral damage that is done by not only predatory behavior, but by the tolerance of predatory behavior. You know, you don't think of it that way, but there you have a young woman who had an opportunity that was potentially transformational for her career-wise, and she was denied that opportunity because of the, you know, an organization accepting and being complicit, really, if you will, with an individual who was behaving inappropriately and in a way that is, I'm sure, against company policy.
And you've discussed this seismic change a lot, and you'll focus some of your TV work on it now. So this is something you're really passionate, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I've always been very much a feminist, and I've always really wanted equal opportunities for women in every industry. And so I think that this is a long time coming and that we need to now go forward. Mm. And in addition to the accusations, allegations, and removals of some of these individuals, I think we need to all work together to talk about how we make a culture that is more open to and inclusive for all people, not just women, but, you know, people of color, and to ensure that everyone has a seat at the table. And how do you change that from attitudes to actual policy?
The last time you felt scared.
I mean, there are degrees of being scared, right? Probably when I was worried about my daughter's health.
The last person who made you feel nervous to meet them.
I'm really not very nervous to meet anyone at this point.
I can imagine that.
But I was a skosh nervous most recently to meet Graham Norton.
Really?
Well, a little, just because, you know.
One of ours.
Yeah, he's so funny and so nice. And, you know, he's good at what I'm good at, I think.
Yeah.
And so I was a little nervous about how our chemistry would be.
And how was it?
It was magical.
The last story you read about yourself?
Gosh, I think it was maybe about American Inside Out, my Nat Geo series.
The final question for my podcast today has to be about the current US President, Donald Trump. And what I want to know from you is that here you are as one of the central figures on the New York media market when Donald Trump is ruling New York, essentially. So I presume you must have known him at least in a media context because he cared so much about people like you. So did you know him? What was your relationship like? And my goodness, what do you think about the fact that he got to the White House?
Well, you know, I knew him, of course, because he is such a fixture in the New York scene. But I knew him in a very kind of cordial social way. I'd see him at events. I remember looking at a picture I saw at Tony Bennett's, I think, 80th birthday party, and I saw
And so you'd just pose up like he's any other celebrity,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, yeah. And he was, you know, as you know, just kind of a larger-than-life New York figure.
Yeah.
And I went to his wedding at Mar-a-Lago.
Did you?
I did. And
so
you
were that close?
Well, I mean, I don't know about that close, but we were friendly.
And
definitely.
So you knew Melania as well?
A little bit. You know, I mean, you know these relationships. I think a lot of people at this day and age invite a lot of business associates instead yeah. of necessary, and in addition yeah. to close friends.
Was it a loving wedding? Did you buy into it? Did you think the relationship was real?
I mean, I don't know. It seemed to be. It was very beautiful, and it was interesting because Hillary Clinton was there, and yeah. it's all a bit of a blur, but you know, I was flattered to be included. And so I know him in a way, but I would not say we're super close. And
have you been in touch with him post-presidency?
I haven't.
Would you like to interview him?
Yeah, of course I would. I would be interested in interviewing him. I think it's the wildest thing. I'm sure watching from over here,
it's like watching a movie, Katie.
It's like every hour is a new controversy or a new scandal or a new outrage. And I think it's very anxiety producing for a lot of people. And I think the media folks in my business are doing an incredible job keeping up with this kind of fast and furious news cycle every day.
They say art imitates life, but really this is life imitating art. It feels like an episode of Scandal every day, and we're living it. You know, and I used to watch Scandal a few years ago and be like, this is ridiculous, it would never happen. It's happening.
But I feel like it's even more intense than Scandal in some ways.
Which is
right?
saying
because,
something.
You know, at
well,
least
real,
they had a plot
one.
Line that was yeah. sort of cohesive. Yeah. Here it's like, you know, there's so many balls in the air and so many yes. conflicts and so many crises, you don't even know where to look yeah. anymore. And to try to make sense of it is very difficult. And I think it's hard, too, because he's so unconventional personally that oftentimes that sucks all the oxygen out of the room, his statements, his tweets. And sometimes it makes it difficult to really evaluate policy because there are so many other things that are distracting us.
I mean, you've obviously known Oprah a lot. Your careers have been very closely intertwined. I don't know if you're close.
Yeah,
but, you know,
I mean, I would say we're not close, but I admire her deeply.
Do you think she's a woman who could be president despite a lack of presidential experience?
I mean, I imagine
lack of
that
political experience. I mean, we've all got a lack of presidential experience.
I imagine if she surrounds
president.
Herself with really great people, and you know, I think part of the trick is being a great talent selector and knowing what you don't know, right? And I think certainly as a sort of moral and spiritual leader, she's got what it takes in droves. You know, I think it's hard to say. I think until somebody actually gets in that role, and I don't know her well enough to know about her management style, but she's certainly proven to be incredibly successful. So I think if she selected really good people, why not?
But we're definitely not going to have Katie Couric for president.
Oh, God, no. Gosh. I mean, it's amazing. Who would want that job? I mean, I think...
tell me about it. Awful.
I hate to say it because, I mean, God bless the people who are willing yeah. to commit their lives to public service. But there's a reason why all these people start with the head of brown hair and end up with a head of gray hair.
Katie, thank you so much.
Thank
for being
you.
Here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I honestly could have kept on talking to Katie Couric for hours, but we have physically been thrown out of my little pod studio, so I actually had to wrap it up. But I just find her so fascinating. She has lived through American pop culture history, and I absolutely love her podcast as well. So if you enjoy this, then you can subscribe to hers. Or if you're listening to my podcast for the first time simply to hear my interview with Katie Couric, then make sure you subscribe right now, because we've got loads of other big names. You can hear from Celine Dion and Ed Sheeran and James Corden, Meghan Trainor, all making big revelations and big in-depth chats. If you subscribe now for free, you'll find all of them in my back catalogue. But of course, on a recent episode of the show, we had a Love Island special, which is this big UK reality show, and last year's winner, Kem Setanay. He joined me to talk all about the fallout from his relationship with Amber Davies, the other winner of the show, ending. Loads of feedback from you. At Kim Ray said, I would love to see Kim and Amber reunited again. I still hope Love Island might reunite them. To be honest, I don't think that's going to happen. Craig Adams said to me, Love Island will never find a better match than Chris and Kim. Hashtag bromance. On the similar note, Algax is still trying to stay in the limelight about Kim. I always thought he was more into Chris than Amber. I think, as he said, they're very good friends, but definitely not into him sexually. And Reader01 says, I can't believe him and Amber split up. I thought they loved each other and would be together forever. Silly me. I really believed it was real. Never believe reality TV, Reader01. Never believe it. And Al said, Amber was a mixer. She liked to start trouble and then stand back to watch it all explode. She was rude, manipulative, a liar, and her voice is annoying too. He should never have split the money with her. That's a tough verdict. You know what? I saw Amber actually the morning after I'd recorded the podcast with Kim at my other job at the Lorraine Show at ITV. And we actually played her some of the podcast where Kim spoke about the fact that he had ended the relationship. And I could see that Amber was actually just really gutted about it. So I felt for her. Anyway, thank you so much for being here for the special edition of the podcast with Katie Couric, the US broadcasting legend. And make sure you subscribe right now because we're going to be back with a huge A-lister coming up very soon.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.